DW Africa Link.
Air travel is claiming lives across the continent at an alarming rate. From Malawi to Kenya to Ghana, citizens, including high-profile figures, have fallen victim to air crashes. In a recent incident in August, an Air Force military helicopter crashed in Ghana, resulting in the tragic loss of all eight on board, including Defense Minister Edward Omane Boamah and Environment Minister Ibrahim Murtala Mohammed. A government investigation is underway, but the pressing question remains: are these isolated accidents or indicative of a larger, urgent problem in African aviation? That's what's coming up. I am Eddie Micah Jr., and you are welcome to Africa Link, the podcast connecting you to the stories that matter.
Africa Link, every weekday, here on DW.
Three deadly air crashes in just months have shaken Africa. In 2024, Malawi's Vice President, Saulos Chilima, died when his military plane crashed. Blamed on poor weather, pilot error, and lack of radar. That same year, Kenya's military chief, Francis Ogola, and nine others were killed in a helicopter crash shortly after takeoff. Then in August 2025, Ghana lost its defense and environment ministers in another helicopter crash, one of the worst in the country's aviation history. So what's going on? Let's fly safely into this with Dr. Dominic Andor, lead consultant at Aviation Ghana, and DW's Ajoa Tenkroma Domina in Accra, Ghana. Hello and welcome to Africa Link, both of you. Such a tragedy it was in Ghana, Ajoa. Can you walk us through how the Ghana crash unfolded and how the country reacted?
Yes, Eddie, thank you for having me. On the 5th of August, that's a day before the incident happened, we saw a flyer about the launch of the Responsible Cooperative Mining and Skills Development Initiative. That also happened in the Ashanti region and had the president and the lands minister on it. And so on the Wednesday, there was that expectation and media awareness that that event was going to happen in the Ashanti region. What we did not know was that in the morning of the event, we understand that the president had asked the minister for the defense to replace him on that assignment because he also had some, you know, assignment that he had to attend to. So then on Wednesday morning, just around 10 a.m., we had news of a helicopter crash, and this was coming from locals in that community. There was not a lot of clarity at the time about who was on board and what they were going to do. But by midday, a lot of media houses had connected the dots to that event that was supposed to be happening and the need for the helicopter to go into that region at that particular time. But still, the details were very sketchy. People were trying to get what they could get from their, you know, regional correspondents in the Ashanti region. Then around 1 p.m., we saw that the Ghana Armed Forces had released a statement just around 1:32 p.m., at which time the speculation was very rife on social media about who was on that helicopter and what had happened to them. That statement did not help matters a lot because it was very short and brief. It just said the Z9 helicopter belonging to the Ghana Armed Forces had, you know, lost, had been lost to the control room. And so they were trying to find it and all the grammar around that. So it was very brief. Not until after 2 p.m. that the chief of staff himself, Julius Ebra, came to address the press at the Jubilee House. That address, you know, was different. And immediately people knew something was wrong because for press briefings at the presidency, it's usually the minister of state in charge of government communications. That's Felix Kwachiofusu who handles it. So for the chief of staff himself to come and address the press, that was new. And his posturing itself communicated that something was wrong. So at that time, he mentioned the names of the people who were on board and indicated that all eight people comprising three crew members and then five government officials out of which two ministers of state were part had all perished in that helicopter that crashed. So that's how the news unfolded, and public reaction, as you may very guess, well guess, and people were very shocked and sad at how things had unfolded. But it raised a lot of questions, which I'm sure we'll get into very shortly, Eddie.
Definitely raised a lot of questions, Ajoa. Thanks for that breakdown of how events happened on that day. I mean, for many Ghanaians, you hardly hear about such, you know, air crashes, right? The last time it happened was, what, 10 years ago or so? And this is exactly what we want to talk about. What can we connect this with based on your research so far, Dominic?
So, yes, the current state of aviation is that the military have their own air navigation service providers, and the civilian also have DS. So for this particular helicopter, which was involved in the accident, the air traffic controllers that was helping the flight were purely military people, not the Ghana Civil Aviation Authority.
So in a sense, you had no control over whether all safety checks and protocols were observed.
So before the helicopter takes off, an engineer will have to, one, certify that it's fit to fly. If the engineer certifies that it's fit to fly, it comes down to the pilot. The pilot will also do their checks and make sure that the aircraft is fit to fly. And then they will do what we call a pre-flight weather analysis. So they will look at the weather of the place and determine whether the weather is good enough to fly. For this particular helicopter in question, if the sky is very clear, it's a sunny day, the VFR, what we call visual flight rules, the visual flight rules essentially means that if you can't see in front of you for a certain meters, you don't fly. So the visual flight rules for this particular helicopter is about 800 meters. When the skies are clear, there's no fog, bright sunlight, you should see ahead of you 800 meters, otherwise you don't fly. If you have to come down because the weather is bad and you have to come down a bit, it says that you must see in front of you 5,000 meters at least. It means that these helicopters don't fly very high. Mm. It doesn't go like the planes. They fly under the clouds. So if you can't see properly because of poor visibility, you now have to come low and fly a bit lower to be able to see. And the rule is that if you are coming down a bit to be able to see, for this particular equipment, if you are coming down, you must see in front of you for about 5,000 meters. If the sky was clear, there's no problem, and you are flying so high, then you can see about 800 meters, that's fine. That's the rule governing this one. So the question we raise is, was the VFR, visual flight rules, followed? Just like how Africa World Airlines in December will tell you, oh, I can't fly to Tamale because visibility is poor. They have their threshold, visual flight rules. If you don't see in front of you 900 meters, don't fly. Mm. So the pilots will sit in the plane and tell us, poor weather, we should wait a bit. After 2 hours on the tarmac, he may decide to cancel the flight because he still can't see in front of him 200 meters.
Right. These are all very important points that you're raising or making. Thanks for that. So again, investigations are going on to you know, verify if all of these safety measures or protocols were respected or were done accordingly. Again, talking about overall aviation safety or the aviation industry, is it well equipped basically to serve the needs that it's there for, or are there challenges that need to be dealt with?
All right. So I'll answer your question in two folds. The first one has to do with the civilian one. The civilian ones, we don't have a problem. All the 23 plus airlines flying to Ghana, the others flying to Kenya, Ethiopia, Nigeria, they all use modern fleets of Boeings, Airbuses, and even the Embraers that we use by Africa World Airlines and the likes. So the civilian one, we don't have a problem. The military one, it's a bit problematic because they are financed by the state. So it's the government of each country that has to commit a lot more resources into retooling the military. Unfortunately, the late Buama spoke about it, that during his time, he's going to retool the military. And unfortunately, this happened to him. So yes, they admit that you have to commit a lot more resources into getting the military probably better equipment when it comes to helicopters and the likes. But the accidents occurring frequently nowadays, I must point out that helicopters are very sensitive equipment. Remember what happened to Kobe Bryant? A little bad weather, you go down. Access Bank CEO, a little bad weather, you go down. Essentially because they don't fly very high. they fly 1,000 feet, 2,000, 1,500 feet. It's a bit low. So if their visibility is not good enough, you go down. And especially in this weather in August, it's moist, it's raining, humidity is high, and they were flying over a forest area. When you are flying over a forest area, the moisture content in that place is high, and it can impact the performance of the aircraft, the helicopter itself, in addition to not being visible. So those are all factors that comes into play. If they're flying over a savannah region, you say, oh, I mean, moisture is not a lot. But we are flying over a forest area where there's a lot of moisture in the air in August, which is the coolest month in the year, and drizzles and rains every time. And visibility is really poor in August. I'm not surprised the Kenyan one also happened because they also experienced almost the same weather.
Right. So this is even why it's more important than to invest, right, in the sector. Let me come to you, Adjoa, briefly on this, because you've also been speaking to some of these experts. And is there growing concern among Ghanaians about the safety of air travel, especially, you know, for public officials?
Yes, Eddie, thank you for that question. There are concerns indeed. Before this accident happened, what a lot of Ghanaians had associated with flying was affluence. And so you see a lot of people make comments about government or public officials using taxpayers' money to fly, and for which reason they do not pay particular attention to bad roads. So when people are, for instance, complaining about the state of their roads, they don't have real-time experiences of what that feels like. But after this accident happened, people are now realizing that even for flying in the air does not come easy or safe enough. And so there's that conversation holistically about safety of transport. And if whether road transport, whether air transport, people are making that, you know, call for proper regulation and proper safety mechanisms. I'm happy that Doc initially mentioned the things to look out for instance, when a helicopter is flying. I've heard a lot of aviation experts speak on this matter. And they have, you know, listed a number of things to look out for. For instance, the crew that he mentioned. So some aviation experts say you have to look out for the crew. You have to look out for the aircraft itself that is flying, as well as the situation on the ground. And with the crew, what level of preparedness do they have? What level of emergency training do they have so that, for instance, if you have checked the weather before flying and you along the trip, you see that things are not looking very well. What are the mechanisms available? Is there a situation or is there training for emergency landing? And how can you do that in that circumstance? Especially because it's a forest, a heavily forested area. And so landing may have been problematic at all fronts. There's also the issue about the aircraft itself. I have heard a lot of people say that this particular Z9 has had so many issues even in the past. There are people who have flown in it before who are coming out to say that, look, this aircraft is not in the best of shapes. And there are others who are saying that the country's air fleet, especially for the military or the Ghana Armed Forces, if it's going to carry high-profile people, we have to pay specific attention to it. And so all the ones that are old or, you know, have come in the country and have been used over and over again or have served their time, they should probably be retooled. So there's all this conversation going on, but it all boils down to safety. And I'm happy that a lot of people are now concerned about the safety of not just road travel, but air travel as well, Eddie.
Right. Thank you very much, Adjoa. And Dominic, look, at the end of the day, whatever the reason, this is a tragedy. But this should obviously draw attention to aviation safety overall. How does the situation in Ghana, when it comes to aviation industrial sector, how does that compare to other countries in Africa? You can mention one or two examples. And is there any comparison that you can sort of point out?
All right. When it comes to that, in the past, we will cite Nigeria, where we had a lot of helicopter crashes, small plane crashes here and there. But Nigeria, things have improved. And in respect of Ghana, interestingly, a week before this accident happened, the president of Ghana inaugurated what we call the multi-agency command center. You know, the military do their own thing. When they are going to attack a country, etc., they don't need clearance from civil aviation, so they have their own air traffic controllers. But the multi-agency command center is supposed to help in this regard, so that if the military equipment fails, they can rely on the civilian one. So in one big room with all the machines, every agency is present, which is supposed to help avert some of these things. And this was just like days away from this particular accident. So we're hoping that the agency command center will help address some of these things. For instance, when it comes to Ghana's safety overall, the last time ICAO, which is the International Civil Aviation Authority, visited us, they rated us very high. It is 5 or so plus. So Ghana's aviation sector was very safe. However, that was for civil, not for military. Nobody goes around rating the military's safety and preparedness. No.
How do they check then to see if there are challenges that need to be addressed?
The military has its own rules. So what they do is that the chief of air staff, the overseas, the air staff, they need to have their own staff. So this particular one, for instance, a committee was going to be set up, made up of the military. The military themselves were going to investigate themselves. But fortunately, the president has intervened and brought in some other experts from the civil aviation side who are not obliged to respond to what the military says, and some retired officers who can speak their mind freely to join this committee to go to China. Ordinarily, it's the military who investigate, not anybody else coming on board. So the military, you cannot go and assess them, but the International Civil Aviation Authority, an arm of the UN, assesses civil aviation and makes sure that everything is in place. But the military, there is nobody that goes around investigating all militaries to see that if their aircraft is good or not. It's the duty of the state to retool the military and make sure that what they lack, they supply.
Ajoa, unfortunately, it took such a tragedy for attention to be brought to the aviation sector. Are you getting a sense from all the people that you're talking to that indeed a lot is going to be done to make sure that no one that flies would have the scare of a crash in the air?
Eddie, so from the government level, it appears they have been very shaken by what has happened. And so you can count on the commitment to get things done. But the timing or the duration within which they can work is also something you have to consider, because it's a lot of work to be done. But in terms of doing something, it starts with investigating and knowing exactly what happened before they can even make an attempt of fixing that situation. And we do know, at least from what the president has said in that address to the nation, that they are going to ensure a full-scale investigation and a transparent one as well into the things that happened. We know some committees have been formed to investigate this particular matter. And so we are looking at how things are unfolding. But from all indications, it appears that the government or the aviation sector players are very concerned about what happened. And civil society are suggesting things that may have gone wrong and how we can move forward from here. And so I'm sure that in investigating, all of these angles will be considered so that the country can move on from this place.
Right, which is definitely a good step in the right direction. It didn't have to take this accident to look into it, but still better late than never. And also very important points being raised by Dominic, that sort of separation of the military side of things versus civil somehow could make it difficult. And so that sort of unified system where you have an overall aviation group of people that are checking whether it's military or civilian, that are just checking that all the boxes have been ticked and everything is ready to ensure that such accidents do not happen often. I mean, to be fair, in Ghana, this is not very common. It's just that overall in the continent, this has been increasing gradually over the past year or so. So let's wrap it up with this, Dominic. What more policies could improve air safety and accountability in Ghana, but also across the continent, so we don't really hear much of these accidents again?
What Ghana has done is what others should also do. A lot of the countries in Africa, their civil aviation authority is still the same organization that investigates accidents. And it makes it very difficult for the truth to come out, because you can't investigate yourself and fault yourself. So one, a lot more countries in West Central Africa need to decouple the accident investigation arm from the regulatory arm, so that you, the regulator, you sit at the top, at the apex, and supervise the airport operations like airport company, and then you supervise the, you also work closely with the AIB, accident investigations, to ensure that if anything happens and the regulator is the one at fault, it will come out for us to learn from it. If anything happens and it's the airport operator that is at fault, or come out of it, then we learn from it. Secondly, various governments in Africa should retool their military, especially the Air Force, because the Air Force need a lot of equipment and they do a lot to help. This same squadron leader who was flying the helicopter is somebody also trained to rescue people in such situations. If you go into such situations and you have to send somebody to rescue, he's one of those trained to do that. So, and evacuation, medical evacuations and the likes, we do a lot with the military. So if you read through the Air Force, it actually benefits the entire nation.
When it's clear that there's going to be a crash, right? Like, you know, it's sort of lost control. The helicopter is, you know, swirling all over the place. Why can't people jump out of the helicopter with a parachute? I don't mean to make it funny or anything, but I've really just wondered how realistic or not that is. Isn't it just possible to jump out before the crash happens?
It's not easy. I've flown in this particular helicopter before. I was with the late Honorable Kofi Adda. We had to inspect some airports in Kete Kwache, Navrongo, and Tamale. So we did. And Eddie, it was no joke. If you're not a military man comfortable with that system, you will not like it. I didn't like it either. It was clear skies in March, and I still didn't like it. You see, you are strapped in the seatbelt that they give you. You are strapped in it. And then you are flying. In the military, when they have to drop their soldiers off, they already plan it. They know that when you get to this particular field, you use this rope to go down. That one, in the military sense, they do it. But you're not wearing a parachute. This one, we don't wear parachutes. In the helicopter, I was with Kofi Adda the whole day. There was no parachute. Nobody's giving a parachute.
Right. I mean, yeah. I wish I would have heard something like, yeah, it's something that should be tried, to be honest. Maybe
parachute. Oh, definitely they do it. But for civilians, nah, they will not recommend it. Except when you know that this thing is down and the pilot tells you, jump out. Probably he may have positioned the aircraft in such a way that he knows you can jump. He said, jump out. Then if he commands you to do it, then you try and do it as much as possible. You may get hurt in the process, but you may survive if he tells you to. That means he will hold the aircraft, tell you guys to jump off, and then he may go and crash the helicopter or land somewhere for it.
I'll tell you, for me, I'll definitely jump. Adwoa, would you jump?
I will jump out. I will definitely jump out if there is that, you know, command or the availability of a parachute to do so, because nobody really looking at a crash coming would want to stay in there for that to happen to them. So I definitely would have jumped out.
Yeah. I mean, as Dominic is saying, it's probably easier said than done. And until you're in the situation, you don't know how to behave, maybe. But I've just really wondered about it. But anyway, we'll see what comes out of these investigations and what more can be done to protect people, whether military or civilians, in any aircraft, any type of aircraft. Thank you very much, Dr. Dominic Ando, Lead Consultant, Aviation Ghana. Also, many thanks, Adwoa Tinkrama Domina, DW Correspondent in Accra, Ghana.
Africa is changing. Don't get left behind. Tune in to Africa Link.
It's only fair to acknowledge that Africa's aviation sector has made significant strides in safety in recent years, with no fatal commercial jet crashes reported between 2020 and 2023. However, a series of high-profile accidents involving smaller aircraft in 2024 and 2025 has reignited concerns about aviation safety across the continent. The reality is that Africa's aviation sector is still grappling with substantial challenges: aged fleets, harsh weather conditions, inconsistent regulations, and inadequate infrastructure. Few sub-Saharan countries meet global safety standards, and accident investigations are often not transparent. The need for improved regulation and infrastructure is dire. We value your perspective on this important issue. So share your thoughts with us on our Facebook page, DW Africa. You can also listen to us on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to click follow and subscribe to our DW Africa YouTube channel so you never miss an episode. This show was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabe. And I am Eddie Micah Jr. Thanks for listening.
DW. Made for Minds.